We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Station. That's all brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises, guys. The Warriors, any concern with the Oubre and this deal, him being out again? Or are we full-blown on the Warriors are fine without Kelly Oubre? They don't need Kelly Oubre, Dibs. They don't need James Wiseman. They're rolling.
Well, they don't need Wiseman, but they do need Oubre Jr. because of what we talked about yesterday, just the idea that Kevon Looney's going to play 31 minutes a night. I don't think that's sustainable. A guy who's had his share of injuries, both big and small. And we even injected the name Smiley Geach into the conversation yesterday, where you don't want to play him, but if you start getting down on bodies, you have to play him. And this is a bench unit that has been under fire all year, and now it's made thinner by not having Wiseman and not having Oubre Jr. So I think you're going to miss Oubre more than you're going to miss Wiseman. And really, if you're Kelly Oubre and you're in the situation where you're going to be a free agent and the team, the Warriors, would maybe want you to be a bench player next year and you don't want to do that, so now you might be counting your days to the end of your time with the Golden State Warriors. So I'm not questioning the toughness, but if I were in Oubre Jr.'s spot and I had an injury such as this, I wouldn't necessarily be busting my hump to rush back for a team that probably doesn't want to pay me and keep me anyway.
I would hope, JD and Dibs, that's not the case. And, you know, he would take the professional route. But from a personal standpoint, I told you, outside of watching Steph Curry be Steph Curry, it's incredible. You know, James Wiseman was my next pleasure. But from a team standpoint, and I said it the day after, they didn't miss him. And we saw that in Denver, and I don't think they're going to miss him the rest of the way. Now, would they like him to be out there? Of course. But Kelly Oubre, on his good day, his best day, JD, gives you a guy to where you don't have to go into that light bench you have. You don't have that luxury, and Oubre can defend. He's an option, and I'm just worried. Here I go, you know, like the Mavericks. When's he going to be available? Like, how long is this injury? We saw Wiseman out a little while with the wrist, and we saw that fall. So this is concerning for me going into the playoffs or even down the stretch. If the Warriors can't have Oubre, I can honestly tell you, and look you both here in the face on Zoom, they're not the best version of themselves without Oubre.
Yeah, they need him. They need his athleticism. They need his defense. It's looking with the back-to-back, although he had been briefly upgraded to doubtful last night. Like, it's probably more likely than not going to be Oubre being out tonight and tomorrow, and then that gets you to Saturday, and then Saturday, Monday, when you go Boston and Philly. It feels to me, at least at this point, like Saturday is probably going to be the earliest that Kelly Oubre is on the floor. And let's just be honest about it, guys. I mean, the Warriors should be able to get through tonight's game against OKC and tomorrow's game against Cleveland without Kelly Oubre and figure out a way to get a win. But as far as Boston and Philly goes, Dibs, to me, that's when you need to get him back in the fold so you can be competitive in those games.
Well, no game is a we can do without fill in the blank player game for this Warrior team, as we've seen. Wow. So, you know, Thunder team, it's lost 7 in a row, and you mentioned by double figures. It still is a Thunder team playing at home, and they look at this Warrior team as a chance to end a losing skid. It's not like, you know, you're going up against a 73-win Warrior team. And I think there's still a sentiment around the league, around our league, of teams looking for payback. You know, because the Warriors ran roughshod over virtually everybody for five or so years. And now when they're down, you know, they're down a little bit. So you may want to make a run at them when the bully on the playground shows a little vulnerability. That's a time where people start to take a run at him. So I think this is a situation where you can't look past any opponent.
Yeah, I agree with you, Dibs. And I just, you brought me back to Friday. When you have guys, bona fide scorers and ballers like Westbrook and Beal, but I'm not hating on none of the, you know, these young Thunder players, but they don't have that. They got Dort. Nice story, John Dickinson, but the Warriors better win this game. I'll leave it at that. I was going to say by double digits. They're favored by 11. I know that credit card is – I'm trying to get it, you know, on. But at the end of the day, this is a must-win from – it would be a disaster if somehow you slipped up tonight and threw that momentum that you got from beating the Nuggets out the window. They've done it before. Can't do it again.
Yeah, I don't want to give away your guru's lock of the day, which is coming up at 120. But I mean, are you thinking about laying the 11? You thinking about laying 11 tonight? Or
yeah, no, I left that alone because I would be the reason that they slipped up, Dibs, and I'm not going to have that on my record.
Mm-hmm.
There you go, Stoddy.
Warriors are giving 11 on the road.
Minus 11 on the road with no Oubre. Like, I smell something.
Yeah, that's
okay.
OKC
is openly tanking, though, Dibs.
They are. There's no doubt. But they play hard. I've been watching.
Well, I mean, are you really tanking if you're just terrible? That's, you know, that's to me where I think sometimes we throw the umbrella.
That's a great question.
Boy, sometimes we use the tanking umbrella inappropriately because if you're a bad team.
Yeah, how are you tanking?
Yeah, if the Thunder are openly tanking, the Warriors are closed tanking. Like
look,
that,
the Thunder
it's
were
not like the Warriors are awesome.
The Thunder were like they were competitive
early.
To the point where they started shutting down healthy players and trading players. Like Al Horford is not playing because he was helping them too much. Like that's a thing.
How can he be okay with that? We saw it with other players, Aldridge, like where did you go for 3 weeks?
He didn't sign with them, Goo, and so he's getting his money, and he's rolling with it. I mean,
at the house,
he's rolling with it. He's cool with it. I mean, they went to him and said, "Hey, we want to play the young guys, want to develop, i.e., want to lose as many games as possible."
Yeah, I want to hoop. Got about and I'm a Thunder. Picks. I want to play. Y'all brought me in here.
Okay, you're going to be a healthy and active, Goo. You're going to be a healthy and active. You can suit up, but I'm not.
Too. Yeah, might be a spree well, JD. Watch out.
You could suit up, but I'm not putting you in the game.
Oh, man, that is crazy. That stinks.
Yeah, so this would be – and look, the Warriors have run the gamut this year, Goo. I mean, it's been back and forth. Just when it looks like they're about to turn, they take an L that's unseemly. Just when you think maybe they're about to be in big trouble, they will win a game like a couple of the games that they've been able to pluck in the last week. A couple nights ago against Denver, the game against Milwaukee – the reality, though, is with Steph, because we can talk about with Oubre, without Oubre. We can talk, Goo, about with Wiseman, without Wiseman. The real situation for the Warriors this year is with Steph, without Steph. With Steph, they should be expected to beat OKC.
53, what's over under between you and Dibs on Curry tonight? I'm going 38. I'm setting it at 38. I think he can get 25 in his sleep, and with the three ball, we might even see 40. Would you be surprised, guys, if we saw 50 again?
I'd be surprised because you need minutes to get 50, and if you're an 11-point favorite and you're going to cover the number, that means you're up by 18 after three quarters maybe, and Steph may not emerge for the fourth quarter. So I'm going to go under 38 on the Chef. I will say this, though, Goo. There have been 11 games this year in which a player has scored 50 or more points in our league, and the Chef has three of those 11. So if anyone's going to explode, you got Curry with the 62. We know that. Beal had 60. The Chef had 57. Fred Van Vliet with 54. Tatum and Curry with a 53-pointer. Embiid, Jokic, Lillard, Murray, and LaVine with 50-point games. So, you know, you put the number at 38, and Steph's had three of the 11 50-plus games. So as much as 38, it's got to be an under. If anyone's going to shatter it, it would be Steph Curry.
All right, let's give away some cash. Time now for the Splash for Cash contest. Here's your chance to win $1,000. Text the code word WIRE to 72881. That's WIRE to 72881. Brought to you by Outdoor Supply Hardware, Patio, Garden, and more at Osh.com. This is a multi-state contest. Message and data rates apply. Coming up next, we'll switch gears. There is a stat the A's are surprisingly leading the Giants in the early going this season. We'll get into that. You won't believe what it is. It's all straight ahead right here on 95.7 The Game.
You're listening to Steiny, Guru, and Dibs. Featuring Sean.
That's a problem.
Dickinson.
Right center field. It's into the gap. All the way out to the seventh archway. Posey to third. Wotus waving him home. India throws home. Teeth! And the Giants have gone ahead on a triple from Austin Slater.
Yeah, the Giants would go on to win last night, 7-6 over at Oracle Park as they bounce back from being down 4-0 in the first inning. It was 4-4 at the end of the first. The ball just flying out of the ballpark last night, and the Giants bouncing back off of losing the series opener. So they are now 7-4 on the season, off to a little bit of a surprising start. Dibs, another surprise in the early going this season has been the attendance at Oracle Park. Obviously, fans being allowed now at reduced capacity to attend games here in the Bay Area. And you had a nugget that absolutely blew me away in the pre-show meeting.
Yeah, and the fact is that the Oakland Athletics are ahead of the Giants in average attendance. And I know it's a bit of a curiosity, and it's not indicative of a Giant fan base shrinking or an A's fan base exploding, but just the fact that when you look at average attendance per game, the A's are ahead of the Giants, who are in the bottom five. It struck me as a surprise. And I know it's limited capacity, and it's a small sample and all that, but the fact that the Giants aren't even hitting their allowed capacity, to me, is one of the big surprises in the early going.
And it's about 50% of what is allowed. I know they had basically the full allotment for opening day, but the game since opening day, it's been roughly in that 50% range, right, Dibs?
Yeah, and I think that they're averaging the game actually on Tuesday drew 3,673 fans. Think about that, 3,600 fans. That's candle sticky.
Wow.
And if we go back, JD, and I remember you know, growing up in Marin County in the 80s, especially in like the mid 80s, before the Giants got good and went to the 89 World Series. I was a high school junior in 85 and a senior in 86, and my buddies Tom Avakumovitz. When I was Wiseman, I would leave school in the afternoon, and well, I didn't have a car, and thankfully my good friends Tom Avakumovitz, Steve Rabb, and Rick Barsotti, Rick of course had a Monza, I believe it was Chevy Monza. Or, anyway, we would jump in the car and we would cross the Golden Gate Bridge back when the toll was only $3, and we would stop by Gordo's right there on Irving. Right outside the Golden Gate Park, get a nice big chicken burrito. I used to eat meat when I was Wiseman, and we go down to Candlestick, and you buy a ticket in the upper tank, and you knew you could move down right behind third base, because when I was Wiseman, nobody went to those Giants games, and the crowd we saw yesterday was a Candlesticky in 3,600, and I went to a lot of Giants games when I was Wiseman. Although I was actually 16 and 17 pre-Wiseman, but it's a bit that we love, JD, the when yeah. I was Wiseman bit, talking about when we were, but when I was 18, 19, same thing, you know, going to Giants games and you had crowds like we've seen at AT&T, knee, Oracle Park. So it's just a little alarming, Goo, to see that small of a crowd. And I know it's pandemic related, but JD made the point in the green room, if it wasn't a pandemic, you probably wouldn't have 42,000 for these games for this team.
Yeah, I wonder, because we talked about it, and I was watching the game yesterday, had a great time watching it, JD, the comeback in the first inning, and I looked around, and I was like, when we first heard fans were coming back, I thought, you know, the allotted amount of people that could come back, you know, they would be itching to get in. But if I can just share my story, you guys know I just got over COVID, and I can't produce a negative test. I went and got tested again, guys, and it can be in your system up to 2 to 6 months, and I came back positive. And I say that to say is my brother invited me to the Kings game, and I was all excited, like, you know what, I think I want to go, and I can't provide my vax. I can't get the vaccination, and that's the first time in my life, JD and Dibs, that I couldn't go to a sporting event because I didn't meet the criteria. And I just wonder how much of that is in play. You know, now does Oakland have the same? I don't know if you guys know this. Is it easier to get in a Giant game than it is A's game? Do you got to show you've been vaccinated? I don't know. And I'm wondering if that might have something to do with the numbers.
Yeah, and my understanding was that you did not have to show proof of vaccination or a negative test to get in at the Coliseum, obviously being in Alameda County versus being in San Francisco. And it's funny, Dibs, I know you were talking. To me, it's just a hassle. Like, I remember going to games at Candlestick even in the mid-90s. To this day, I recall going with my dad to a doubleheader. The A's played a day game at the Coliseum. The Giants played a night game. We would do that from time to time and go see two games in one day. And I remember neither game broke, I think, the 9,000 mark. And I know you're talking even thinner than that, but I remember it was something like 7,500 at the Coliseum and maybe 6,900 at Candlestick, and that was even in the mid-90s toward the end of the Candlestick days. But I think as far as the COVID protocols and everything goes, Dibs, I think for a lot of people there is some trepidation about going back and is it fully safe or not. But I also think there's other people out there that think it's just a hassle to have to go through the process of getting a test if you haven't had the vaccine yet.
And I think in 30 days, 60 days, as the vaccine becomes more widespread and more widely done, I think we'll get to a point where, and hopefully this happens sooner rather than later, we get some sort of a passport system where you get an app on your phone. And I feel bad for you, Goo, not only because I know you're still fighting some of the after effects of having COVID-19, but also you want to get back to normalcy and you want to be able to do things and be a part of sports society again. But there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of trepidation out there. Even though if you look at the Giants game, Goo, and they had, you know, 3,000 plus fans, everyone was pretty socially distant. A lot of people, almost everybody wearing their mask outside of, you know, eating and drinking. And so it feels pretty safe. But I have a couple of good friends who aren't yet ready to go, even though they've been vaccinated and they're diehard Giants fans. They just don't quite feel comfortable yet going.
I'll say this, fellas. I don't know if it's you guys. JD, last year it was hard to watch a game with not one somebody in the stands. The 3,200 that we speak of, it felt like 13,000 to me. But have you noticed the Giant game? There's one guy that you can hear screaming instruction, cussing at the ref, telling the batter what to do. And I'm sitting up here like, I think I like this. I don't know who the guy is, but every night it was a female, a young lady the night before last, and yesterday it was a guy. I'm like, that sounds like me at Little Durrell's baseball game. But anyway, you get a chance to listen to the guy yelling from behind home plate.
So you're yelling at the ump in a Little League baseball game, Goo? Is that what you're telling
me? Yeah.
Wow.
Want to get away?
Come on. That's not surprise. That doesn't surprise you, does it, Dibs?
That hurts.
It does, because, I mean, youth sports, I mean, far be it for me to be hypocritical and say that I've never yelled at an official as a high school coach, but just the imagery of Goo getting on little Daryl and then getting on the ump and then back to little Daryl then getting on the ump.
It's little Daryl. It's the instruction of what to do at the plate.
Right.
49er Frankie came to a game. He goes, "Will you shut the F up? Let the guy hit." I go, "Oh, my." Frankie doesn't use profanity much. He said it. "Let the kid hit." And I go, "Oh, maybe I should."
Watch for the slider, little D.
Trying.
Yeah, exactly.
Keep your elbow up now. It's 3-2.
Totally.
It's coming to you.
I think it's interesting, guys, because I do believe we would be talking right now in the first home week of the season for the Giants about crowds. And I mentioned this even going into last year before the pandemic hit. The bloom was off the rose as far as this Giants team goes. And it was going to be, I think, rough for them last year had things been normal, given the downward trajectory and maybe not a lot of optimism as far as the managerial hire and another year of Farhan Zaidi. And Farhan's done a solid job to this point, Dibs and Goo, but I think in some ways the pandemic has covered maybe what would be a more uncomfortable conversation that the Giants might have to be having about why their ballpark that would on bad nights still average 30 to 32,000 was getting half a capacity or maybe even slightly less on a Monday and a Tuesday night a week into the home campaign against Cincinnati.
It's hard to say because if you look back to the Giants' attendance in 2019, which I think is a fair way to look at it as far as, last year, no fans and short season. Well, they got 33,000 a game at home, and that's down, JD, 5,500 fans per game, FPG, from 2018, which is down from 17, which is down from 16. But if you just look year over year, 2018 to 2019, and remember, 19 was last year of Bruce Bochy, they were down 5,500 fans, which is about 15%. So you were seeing somewhat of a decline. Now, last year, if there was no pandemic, Gabe Kapler and a new team. And by the way, if they would have played 162 and they would have been, let's just say 78 and 84, competitive and exciting, I think their attendance would have been about the same as it was in 2019. So I'm interested to see where the attendance goes post-pandemic. And, Goo, we might not see it until next year. We might have limited attendance all the way through the entirety of this baseball season. But at that point, what's it going to look like? Because come 2022, opening day next year, they'll be 6 years removed from, actually 8 years removed, I'm sorry, from the last championship. And there probably won't be two Brandons, a Buster, a Cueto. It's going to be a total new look to the team. And I wonder how that affects attendance for the Giants in 2022.
It's going to be interesting. And I got to say this, obviously, you just said it so well, Dibs. This is the residue of the pandemic. We're like, okay, fans can come back, but there's other things involved. So they're three games over 500. And if you watch this Giant team, they're a fun watch. And no other sport like baseball, if you get off to a good start, it's like a horse race, Dibs. I know we got the Kentucky Derby coming up, but you get off to that good start, people will come and want to be a part of that vibe until it fizzles out, if it fizzles. And right now I'm looking like I think there would be asses in the seats, JD, with this Giant team 7-4 getting off to this start. I could be wrong. You could disagree. But right now the Giants are a fun team. They battle to the 27th out. And I just kind of hate to – I want to know, Dibs, would that have changed on 3rd and King if it was just, regular times? Would they be coming to, a day game today that they have?
Like, right.
I'm curious, and we don't know.
2019 was the lowest attendance in the history of that ballpark down at 3rd and King when they averaged 33,429. And it's not even close, JD. The only close years were in 08 and 09, they averaged 35,000 fans
after Bonds
per game. Yeah, that's post-Bonds, right?
Oh, AB.
Yeah, the first 2 years after Bonds, and it was, they had obviously not been a good team. I think that was the fourth straight losing season was 2008 as well.
Yeah, and then 10, they win the World Series, and they only average 37.5, by the way, in the regular year. But then it's 41, 41, 41, 41, 41, 41. You get the point. And then starting in 2018, it dips to 38.9, and then 33,429. But all that's to say, JD, if you go back to the years I was talking about, the candlesticky in years, in 1985, when I was Wiseman, 10,107 was the attendance. And if you go back even further, 1975, they averaged 6,456 fans a game.
Ooh, boy.
Wow. I mean, boy, that's those are some tough times down at the Breezy Stick. I love the stick. I miss the stick. And one thing I miss about it, though, Goo, is you could drive into the parking lot 20 minutes before first pitch and get you a half-price ticket from some enterprising individual selling tickets in the lot. You get in there for about $4
That's
back
the
then.
Best. Yeah, it was my first baseball game, JD. My dad took me to. They still had turf then. But the one thing I remember about it, it was cold as a bear, man. Old stick, stuff flying around.
Yeah.
I'm older than a witch's stick.
Rappers, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think this team has been watchable, I think surprisingly so, maybe, but it feels like an extension. I know we talked about this a couple of days ago. Feels like an extension of last year, you know, a slightly better club. I mean, last night, being down 4-0, I mean, how many times in the last 4 years would they be down 4-0 and you think, well, that's a wrap. They're going to get beat 6-2 or 9-1 or hell, even just 4-0 with about two hits, but they're able to immediately bounce back and tie that game and hang in it to where you think, hey, they're, you know, one home run away from tying a game or one big hit away from maybe going ahead in a game. And frequently here in the first couple weeks of the season, and they did it last year, although it ended up with a 29-31 record, it never really felt, once that season got rolling, like they were out of any game. So I do think if that can continue, Goo, and the record can continue on the same pace that it's on, I do think people will get more excited about this team. But I don't think it would be anywhere under normal circumstances where, like, I think it would be uncomfortable and shockingly uncomfortable how few people, if things were normal, were at Oracle Park. I think last year, just kind of a team, okay team, I don't think that would have got the juices flowing. You almost have to be spectacular to get the common fan hooked and back and engaged with this team. I think to us it plays what they're doing because we're into it every night and we're really following it. I think the common fan needs to see it for longer.
Yeah, and I just hate that, again, Dibs, not to be redundant, that we're not going to find that answer out. But I will say this about the 2021 Giants. Forget Martin Lawrence. Brandon Crawford has life. I mean, he just looks like a new guy, and I wonder how much of it is psychological. The fact that, you know what, he could see his Giant tenure along with Belt coming to an end. You know, there's that noise and fuss about the youngsters on the farm, JD and Dibs. I just wonder if they're like, F that. Posey too. We got something left. And when I'm watching, Brandon Crawford showing more power than he's done the last couple of years, Dibs.
Yeah, and these guys are all playing for not their careers, because they're all established with, you know, three chips and whatnot, but they're playing for their future. And if you're Brandon Crawford, I'm sure he would love to be a San Francisco Giant for the entirety of his career, having grown up in Pleasanton and having lived here aside from an off-season stint in Arizona. And I can't speak for him, but I would imagine that these guys want to still be here and play here. It's a great organization. But at the same time, and let's put the rat on the table, third rat, fourth if you count the green room rat that JD threw on there. But yeah, I don't think we count green room rats. But this particular rodent is Farhan Zaidi and Gabe Kapler don't have any affiliation to the good old years, and their job is to turn this roster over and to churn it over. That said, if Brandon Crawford has a 20 homer year, or if Buster Posey hits 300 with 17 jacks, you can play your way into staying. Now, the likelihood of that happening is not great, but the worst, you know, the other side of that, JD, would be, you know, Buster hits 290 with 22 homers and they decide, well, we're going young anyway. Buster's getting paid somewhere else. If he and the two Brandons and Johnny Cueto, if you can show and prove that you're still a legit starter in Major League Baseball, you're going to get work somewhere.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, and I think that's going to be the interesting part, because I don't think I think some of those players that have been here could have some real good years, and Farhan Zaidi is going to probably end up letting them walk, and it would wind up being the right decision. I think that's the middle ground that I think Farhan has strived to find, where he could make some of these guys who that have been here look better, make them more playable. And try to bump up their value, try and allow this team to be more competitive, but while all the while knowing that the replacements are on the way. It really feels like he's been on this two, now third-year churn of just try and dress up this roster to where it's not super ugly and you're just a 100-loss kind of bad, but you're sneaky competitive, and some of these guys look better than maybe they've been the last few years, but then you're moving off of them anyway, because at that point you've got the reinforcements on the way.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this will be the first, I deem, juncture that Farhan could say goodbye to the past, as Dibs just mentioned. Now, last year we kind of thought he was a miracle worker. Who would want Crawford and his cut? What came with that and the contract, the belt? But now I think this offseason, JD, this will be the first one to where it's like, okay, we're moving in a different direction. Call up the youngsters. I want to ask you this, JD, because I remember briefly here last year, you were like, you know what, Goo? Just in regard to Gabe Kapler, I think he could be one and done. I totally, and I said it to you last year, Farhan's no dummy. He knew what he was taking on, and I just feel like he hired Gabe Kapler, and I don't want to use scholarship in a negative sense, but it was like he got the Shanahan deal. When you watch this team and Gabe Kapler, do you still have that feeling like you could see them get a new manager? And the reason I ask that is I don't. He's here for 2 to 3 more years, even if they don't finish 500, JD.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, he absolutely will be the manager in 2022, and I would be wrong. And obviously, the pandemic flipped. He wasn't going to be one and done once the pandemic hit, but this year could constitute, I think, a one and done if things went awry. But yeah, I mean, at this point, it's trending toward he will at least be the manager in 2022. And I thought there was some disaster potential for him, and there have been some. Blips along the way, Dibs, and some awkward moments and blunders. But for the most part, even when those have been in play, this team has shown an ability to bounce back. And I'm of the belief that, some of the improvement from the older players is more on the coaching staff or some of the players that Farhan has went out and added to the roster to maybe make those players more palatable. But the reality is you almost have to give Gabe Kapler some credit for those players that have been here performing at a higher level. So it hasn't been the disaster that I thought, although we've seen flashes of it. But right. I think so far so good for Gabe Kapler, to
absolutely
be perfectly honest.
Last year is a freebie as far as Kapler and Zaidi goes. because not only the 60 games, but you didn't have minor leagues. You had no minor league baseball, so you didn't have an opportunity to see the young players that Farhan has tabbed. You didn't get to see them matriculate. The Hunter Bishops and Joey Bart got thrown in ahead of his readiness, and Elio Ramos and all these guys who would have had have you seen what Hunter Bishop's doing down there in San Jose? Well, none of that happened. So last year, they get somewhat of a pass. JD, before we dip, one quick trivia question for you, because we started this talking attendance, and this is for both of you guys. Oh, I love it. Yeah.
I'm kind of down on trivia, but go ahead after yesterday.
Yesterday was, we had a cleanup on aisle goo yesterday, but I like your chances here better. And I'm going to let you go first, Goo. What was the last year in which the Oakland A's beat the San Francisco Giants in average attendance per game?
Oh, I know this.
What year, Goo?
Go ahead, Michael Irvin, 88.
No.
JD?
I want to say 1992.
Spadoni, one of these two is correct. It's time for you to pick sides.
Uh-oh.
Spadone or Kyle.
I said Spadoni's 92 going with right Goo. JD was saying it, so I'm sticking with JD.
Madsen's going JD.
Oh, that hurts.
Spadoni's
hashtag
going with Guru. And the winner is... Nice job, Spadone. 1992. is the correct answer. The San Francisco Giants went 72-90. They averaged 19,272. The A's lost in the ALCS. They averaged 30,792. That was the last year in which the A's outdrew the Giants.
88, they went to the series, though, and those day games, it was packed. I just knew
the A's outdrew them probably that year, too, Goo. It's just, when was the last time? The A's outdrew the Giants for a lot.
Oh, you're
a lot
of the time.
Yeah, the A's outdrew them in 88. The A's also outdrew them in 89. No, that was tough. JD, remember these days for the A's? And I know you do. 88, they drew 2.287. The next year, they drew 2.667, then 2.9, 2.7, 2.4, 2.0. Man, the A's were drawn big back then.
Yeah, they were drawn big, no question.
That was back when I was first
introduced to A's and Giants baseball as a kid.
Bass Brothers.
And everything changed, Goo, and I know we're up against it. Everything changed that fall and winter when the Giants signed Barry Bonds. That flipped it. Barry Bonds was a Giant. They had that 103 win year and built the ballpark in downtown San Francisco, and that was it. So coming up, we'll talk a little bit about Justin Fields. He's airing it out at his second pro day. The 49ers are on hand, and we'll talk about that next. It's all right here on 95.7 The Game.
You're listening to Stymie, Guru, and Dibs, featuring Sean.
That's a problem.
Dickinson.
Rolling along here on a Wednesday. More quarterback talk here. Justin Fields having pro day number 2. That's straight ahead. The segment sponsored by Outdoor Supply Hardware. Perk up your patio and save at Outdoor Supply Hardware right now. Select Bistro and Rocker patio sets are $20 off. Illuminate pathways with solar stake lights, now 2 for $11. Outdoor Supply Hardware with 12 great locations online at osh.com. You guys get a chance to watch any of Justin Fields slinging the rock around at his pro day number 2, guys, during the show? You been locked in on that at all?
Miss me with the pro days. I mean, you're talking about, I'm using your own lexicon, JD. I'm going to steal it wholeheartedly once you're gone. Steiner comes back. But miss me with pro days, because you got a guy running around in shorts on his own field. No pads, no pass rush, no defense. It's almost impossible not to look good. So miss me with the pro day.
He's dropping him in the bucket, Goo. He's dropping him in the bucket.
And I mean, how can a pro day go wrong? Don't you got enough games on tape and film to decide if you want the quarterback to sit out there and just throw? We could do that.
Well, here's the deal, Goo, right? Because you got the 49ers. It was John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. They're at the Mac Jones Pro Day, and they chose the Mac Jones Pro Day over the original Justin Fields Pro Day. Now they're at Justin Fields Pro Day. They're going to be at Trey Lance Pro Day coming up here. I mean, is there anything to glean from making sure you hit everybody's pro day, Goo?
I guess if you're the Niners and, it's like poker, I guess you would take a 5-hour or 6-hour flight, however many hours, Dibs, to go to a locale so people can think you're in on said player. I just don't get it. And again, the games, the pro day doesn't supersede the games. Now, I could be wrong. I'm not a GM, shocker. But this is just a big waste of time to me.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. But you have to continue to play the game, Dibs. You got to continue to make, maybe the teams below you believe that you're in love with all of these quarterbacks, and I think that gives you the option. Maybe to swing a deal. And I think, look, when the 49ers moved up to 3, they're comfortable with whoever. I mean, clearly one of these three between Justin Fields and Trey Lance and Mac Jones. But I think a big part of this is playing the game, right? It's trying to make everybody think that you like one or maybe all of them equally.
Yeah, and you have to go to the pro days. And all we've heard about Kyle Shanahan as it pertains to the Solomon Thomas miss was, oh, they didn't even look at Deshaun Watson and they didn't kick the tires, and which I think is kind of a BS claim for a, I'm mocking everybody, Goo, and you know, you've been a part of that parade. I don't know if you're at the front of the parade, but you certainly are in the parade, and I love a parade, but for me, this is all under the guise of due diligence, even though, to Guru's point, I mean, how do you botch a pro day? Nobody's ever gone 21-37 with two picks at their pro day. There's no D. It's just a guy throwing a football to his former teammates or whatever other person you can get to walk on. So I don't take much credence to the pro day, but then again, you have to go if you're a front office in need of a quarterback, because if not, you know, you didn't do your homework. You didn't go to his pro day.
It feels like bad stuff happens at pro days. Like, you can only hurt your draft stock, right? Like, I don't think the 49ers, if they were sold on Justin Fields, sold on Trey Lance, they're going to go watch Justin Fields and go, oh, wow, we're rethinking everything. Right. Did you see that throw he made?
I would love to know that, Kyle. Like, if we went to see John Dickinson and we really weren't high on him, but he had a hell of a pro day. How many times has the pro day swung it to, oh, we're drafting old JD? Because all the pro day to me, and I'm going Mayock, all you get at is, oh, look at his bubble butt. You know, that's all you get to really look at the physique.
Look at that bubble butt.
That's it.
I'd refuse to do pro days. I wouldn't even do a pro day. I would not even do a pro day, guys. I just would leave it completely alone.
And why would you do two pro days? Kyle, what did I miss about Justin Fields' first pro day? Did he have a rough pro day, or was it
Niners weren't there?
Well, the 49ers were there, but Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch were not.
Yeah. Right.
But why did he have a second pro day?
Throw for those guys in person.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so a special second pro day for Kyle and John.
Yeah, gotcha. But there were seven teams there.
Okay.
It's just for the 49ers.
The Niners, Falcons, Panthers, Broncos, Jets, Patriots, I think, are at this pro day. I may have left one out.
Yeah, and to Kyle's point, like, does a pro day swing you for or against? What can happen at a pro day to where, whoa, we didn't see that coming? I mean, because you saw the guy play at the top level. You saw him play in the national championship tournament, and you saw him play with pads on against 11 guys who were out there trying to bring him to the ground, and now you see him in shorts in Columbus just tossing the pigskin around.
Right.
Is that going to make or break the pick? I just don't get it.
I don't.
Go ahead, Goo.
I'm sorry. No, I was just saying the 650 said Teddy Bridgewater was skipping the ball on his pro day. I don't remember that, but wow. That's
because he didn't wear his gloves. Remember that? Everyone was because he wore his gloves in games, and he didn't wear them in his pro day, and he struggled.
That's incredible. That's Michael Jackson bad. Yeah.
Who's the leader right now for you guys as far as most likely to be the selection, Dibs?
Man, most likely, so I'm putting myself in Kyle Shanahan's shoes, or dare I say, inside his brain. Is that what you're asking me to do? It's not who I want. It's who I think they're going to pick, right?
Yeah. I'm looking at you to be the odds maker here.
I'm going to need the chime in order to appropriately address this. Quiet. Quiet down, quiet. I am Roger Goodell.
Stink. Yeah.
I prefer Roger. With the third pick, the San Francisco 49ers select Mac Jones from Alabama. Quiet.
Wow.
Who? Mac Jones. Who? Mac Jones.
And that booing, Dibs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's play the game with you, Goo, and then JD, I'd like your thoughts as well. Now, I wouldn't take Mac Jones, but I, and you know, Kyle hasn't called me, Kyle Shanahan, that is. My phone's on, Kyle, in case you want my 2 cents. But I wonder what Goo thinks Kyle Shanahan might do. Spadone, if you would.
With the third overall pick, the San Francisco 49ers take the University of Alabama, Mac Jones. That's not what I feel. That's what I'm reading, man. And JD, it's just the Schefters. It's just it's the Fields and these little leaks and stories. But I'll say this. The one thing about Dibs, why my gut feels like it's Jones, bothers me, is how did he get out this early? That's the one thing that has me thinking, are they playing possum?
Well, I don't think much has really gotten out necessarily. I think a lot of it is just that it's people educated speculation and trying to sound like they're maybe in the know. I just keep going back to the fact that if it is Mac Jones, and I know we threw this out there to start the show, I cannot imagine the amount of pressure on Mac Jones if he winds up being the pick. I mean, those boos that we were playing, that those wouldn't be coming from Cleveland. You'd be hearing those boos coming from the Bay Area all the way in Cleveland if Mac Jones is the pick. I mean, the reaction to that, Dibs, would be absolutely incredible if he winds up being the guy.
Well, tell me what you think, JD, that Kyle Shanahan's going to do as we lean on my favorite jingle just one more time. Spadone.
Here we go.
The pick is in, Spadone.
Trey Lance.
Quiet. No, you got to go through the whole thing, Goodell. You got to play your Goodell. Chime me again, Spadone. We'll give JD a second try at it.
With the third pick in the 2021 NFL Draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Trey Lance, North Dakota State.
Wow. Why,
no
though,
booze.
JD? Yeah,
no,
why? Why do you feel it's the unknown, the Wiseman of them all?
Well, to me, I'm taking, and I probably shouldn't do this, I'm taking the 49ers at their word that they intend on keeping Jimmy Garoppolo. And if they really are hell-bent on keeping Jimmy Garoppolo for 1 year and trying to win with him in 21 and then hand the keys off to somebody that they believe has the highest ceiling of any of these three quarterbacks, then I feel that that guy's Trey Lance. I think Trey Lance is the guy that needs a year but also has the most upside at the end of that time. And so he's the pick. I think that's the one that fits in the threading of the needle between keep Garoppolo, keep the pressure off of Lance because everybody assumes that he's not going to be ready, which actually allows Garoppolo to go out there and be effective in year one.
I just think you could have got Lance, Dibs, where you were originally scheduled to draft at. And hold on to your number ones.
At 12?
I don't think so, Ned.
Yeah.
I don't.
Where would he go?
It's risky. Lance?
Yeah.
He might go three. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much an expected result that it's going to go Lawrence and Wilson 1-2. I'd put that at 95 to 100%. That's the way it goes. So if you're Kyle Shanahan and you're sitting at 12, now you're thinking 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That's 10 more picks before it comes to you and only three more quarterbacks. And if it's Lance and if it's Fields and if it's Jones, well, there's a chance that all three of them are gone. And now you're sitting at 12 and you're left holding the bag. And now you're going to take a guard or you're going to take a third tackle and go with a three-tackle offense? I think you're in a bit of a pickle then. Or you use two firsts, you roll the dice, knowing that you're going to be able to get your guy.
Wow. 888-957-9570, 888-957-9570. Steiny, Guru, and Dibs here on a Wednesday. JD sitting in for Steiny. Does who the 49ers pick change the criticism level from the fans? We had that question at the top of the show. We'll reset that here now as you listen to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Station.